"Last winter," he answered. "I shipped out as a cabin boy on a cargo steamer that carried Dunconia copper. My father looked for me for 3 months, but that's all he asked me when I came back."
"So that's how you spend your winters?" said Jim Taggart.
Jim's smile had a touch of triumph, the triumph of finding cause to feel contempt. "That was last winter," Francisco answered pleasantly, with no change in the innocent, casual tone of his voice. "The winter before last I spent in Madrid at the home of the Duke of Alba."
"Why did you want to work on a railroad?" asked Dagny.
They stood looking at each other. Hers was a glance of admiration, his of mockery. But it was not the mockery of malice. It was the laughter of a salute.
"To learn what it's like, slug," he answered.
"And to tell you that I've had a job with Taggart Transcontinental before you did." Dagny and Eddie spent their winters trying to master some new skill, in order to astonish Francisco and beat him for once. They never succeeded. When they showed him how to hit a ball with a bat, a game he had never played before, he watched them for a few minutes, then said, "I think I get the idea. Let me try." He took the bat and sent the ball flying over a line of oak trees far at the end of the field. When Jim was given a motorboat for his birthday, they all stood on the river landing watching the lesson, while an instructor showed Jim how to run it. None of them had ever driven a motorboat before. The sparkling white craft, shaped like a bullet, kept staggering clumsily across the water, its wake a long record of shivering, its motor choking with hiccups, while the instructor, seated beside him, kept seizing the wheel out of Jim's hands. For no apparent reason, Jim raised his head suddenly and yelled at Francisco,
"Do you think you can do it any better?"
"I can do it. Try it." When the boat came back and its two occupants stepped out, Francisco slipped behind the wheel. "Wait a moment," he said to the instructor, who remained on the landing. "Let me take a look at this." Then, before the instructor had time to move, the boat shot out to the middle of the river as if fired from a gun. It was streaking away before they grasped what they were seeing. As it went shrinking into the distance and sunlight, Dagny's picture of it was three straight lines. Its wake, the long shriek of its motor, and the aim of the driver at its wheel. She noticed the strange expression of her father's face as he looked at the vanishing speedboat. He said nothing. He just stood looking. She remembered that she had seen him look that way once before. It was when he inspected a complex system of pulleys which Francisco, aged 12, had erected to make an elevator to the top of a rock. He was teaching Dagny and Eddie to dive from the rock into the Hudson. Francisco's notes of calculations were still scattered about on the ground. Her father picked them up, looked at them, then asked, "Francisco, how many years of algebra have you had?"
2 years.
"Who taught you to do this?"
"Oh, that's just something I figured out."
She did not know that what her father held on the crumpled sheets of paper was the crude version of a differential equation. The heirs of Sebastian Dunconia had been an unbroken line of first sons who knew how to bear his name. It was a tradition of the family that the man to disgrace them would be the heir who died, leaving the Dunconia fortune no greater than he had received it. Throughout the generations, that disgrace had not come. An Argentinian legend said that the hand of a Dunconia had the miraculous power of the saints, only it was not the power to heal, but the power to produce. The Dunconia heirs had been men of unusual ability, but none of them could match what Francisco Dunconia promised to become. It was as if the centuries had sifted the family's qualities through a fine mesh, had discarded the irrelevant, the inconsequential, the weak, and had let nothing through except pure talent, as if chance, for once, had achieved an entity devoid of the accidental. Francisco could do anything he undertook. He could do it better than anyone else, and he did it without effort. There was no boasting in his manner and consciousness, no thought of comparison. His attitude was not, "I can do it better than you," but simply, "I can do it." What he meant by doing was doing superlatively. No matter what discipline was required of him by his father's exacting plan for his education,
no matter what subject he was ordered to study. Francisco mastered it with effortless amusement. His father adored him, but concealed it carefully, as he concealed the pride of knowing that he was bringing up the most brilliant phenomenon of a brilliant family line. Francisco, it was said, was to be the climax of the Danconias.
"I don't know what sort of motto the Danconias have on their family crest," Mrs. Taggart said once, "but I'm sure that Francisco will change it to, 'What for?'"
It was the first question he asked about any activity proposed to him, and nothing would make him act if he found no valid answer. He flew through the days of his summer month like a rocket, but if one stopped him in mid-flight, he could always name the purpose of his every random moment. Two things were impossible to him: to stand still, or to move aimlessly. "Let's find out," was the motive he gave to Dagny and Eddie for anything he undertook, or "let's make it." These were his only forms of enjoyment. "I can do it," he said when he was building his elevator, clinging to the side of a cliff, driving metal wedges into rock, his arms moving with an expert's rhythm, drops of blood slipping unnoticed from under a bandage on his wrist. "No, we can't take turns, Eddie. You're not big enough yet to handle a hammer. Just cart the weeds off and keep the way clear for me. I'll do the rest." "What blood?" "Oh, that's nothing, just a cut I got yesterday. Dagny, run to the house and bring me a clean bandage."
Jim watched them. They left him alone, but they often saw him standing in the distance, watching Francisco with a peculiar kind of intensity. He seldom spoke in Francisco's presence, but he would corner Dagny, and he would smile derisively, saying, "All those airs you put on, pretending that you're an iron woman with a mind of her own. You're a spineless dish rag, that's all you are. It's disgusting the way you let that conceited punk order you about. He can twist you around his little finger. You haven't any pride at all. The way you run when he whistles and wait on him. Why don't you shine his shoes?"
"Because he hasn't told me to," she answered. Francisco could win any game in any local contest. He never entered contests. He could have ruled the junior country club. He never came within sight of their clubhouse, ignoring their eager attempts to enroll the most famous heir in the world. Dagny and Eddie were his only friends. They could not tell whether they owned him or were owned by him completely. It made no difference. Either concept made them happy. The three of them set out every morning on adventures of their own kind. Once an elderly professor of literature, Mrs. Taggart's friend, saw them on top of a pile in a junkyard, dismantling the carcass of an automobile. He stopped, shook his head, and said to Francisco, "A young man of your position ought to spend his time in libraries, absorbing the culture of the world."
"What do you think I'm doing?" asked Francisco.
There were no factories in the neighborhood, but Francisco taught Dagny and Eddie to steal rides on Taggart trains to distant towns, where they climbed fences into mill yards or hung on windowsills, watching machinery as other children watched movies. "When I run Taggart Transcontinental," Dagny would say at times.
"When I run Danconia Copper," said Francisco.
They never had to explain the rest to each other. They knew each other's goal and motive. Railroad conductors caught them once in a while. Then a station master 100 miles away would telephone Mrs. Taggart.
"We've got three young tramps here who say that they're..."
"Yes," Mrs. Taggart would sigh, "they are. Please send them back." "Francisco," Eddie asked him once as they stood by the tracks of the Taggart station,
"you've been just about everywhere in the world. What's the most important thing on earth?"
"This," answered Francisco, pointing to the emblem TT on the front of an engine. He added, "I wish I could have met Nat Taggart." He noticed Dagny's glance at him. He said nothing else. But minutes later, when they went on through the woods, down a narrow path of damp earth, ferns, and sunlight, he said, "Dagny, I'll always bow to a coat of arms. I'll always worship the symbols of nobility. Am I not supposed to be an aristocrat? Only I don't give a damn for moth-eaten turrets and 10th-hand unicorns. The coat of arms of our day are to be found on billboards. and in the ads of popular magazines. What do you mean? Asked Eddie. Industrial trademarks, Eddie, he answered.